the safari park.
You're killing me, Larry.
Hello, Larry.
Hats off to Larry.
Larry. Fucking Larry.
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 Larry. Larry, get into bed now.
Come on, Larry. Larry.
It's still, what, 11 days to Halloween. And a couple of weeks back, I was in Home Depot looking for some stuff to reskin a monster that I built with my first daughter when she was just a toddler. Now, this monster was no kit. We built it from scratch. But as far as Home Depot was concerned, even though October was only a day or two old, Halloween was over, and it was now Christmas. Acres of floor space were covered with fake trees and lights and inflatable Santas and nativity sets. Seasonal acceleration has been standard for retailers for a long time now, but it's never any less odd. Maybe the Southern California weather is a contributing factor. When you're looking at Yuletide stuff in early fall and it's 85 degrees, it just never seems right. But then, when you're hanging out with your kid, nothing is wrong. I suppose that's why they call it quality time. That was a catchphrase a while back you don't hear it used much anymore. When it comes to family, quality time is more rare now than at any time in history. Building that monster with my kid years ago and reskinning it every year is always a fabulous chunk of quality time. Sit in any restaurant and watch families around a table, and each person is immersed in their cell phone. The kids' faces are lit up by the arctic glare of an iPad. They can barely tear themselves away from the screens to talk to a waiter or even eat the food. Long before there were cell phones, a common phrase was, left to his own devices. Who knew it would one day take on a literal meaning? Some people spend a lot of time with their kids watching TV and movies, but that never seemed like high-quality time. It's kind of passive. Ooh, and that third party, that screen, that monopolizes everyone's attention. It controls everybody like some hypno-god. The show must be paused if somebody takes a leak or makes a sandwich. That big screen gets more respect than any person. Nobody dares interrupt it or talks while it's talking or steps in front of it. Then after 2 hours paying homage to it, then what? Well, the search begins for the next distraction that distracts everyone from each other. And if the big screen does get a pee-pee pause, those with empty bladders reach for their phones, that omnipresent second screen. Or if there's a trivia discrepancy, whether Ryan Gosling or Ryan Reynolds was in the sequel, it's like the OK Corral to see who can quick draw their phone first and Google the answer. And people wonder why everyone is so fucked up. There was an old Frank Sinatra movie with a classic line that summed up a lot of households. The flick was called Tony Rome, and he was commenting on a particularly fractured family, and he said, "This isn't a family. It's just a bunch of people living at the same address." Try finding a restaurant that isn't wallpapered with TV screens. They started as sports bars, which is really ironic. Everyone sits on their asses, drinking cirrhosis-promoting liquids and scarfing down greasy, artery-clogging gunk, moving only to shift in their seats while the actual sports, played by real athletes, well, those guys, they're getting richer and stronger and healthier as they cavort for the watchers who become more sedentary and weaker and fatter. The term sports bar is a five-star inaptronym. Isn't that a fun word? I just discovered it. Common inaptronyms would be like a cop named Rob Banks. Or those other classics, huh? Driveway in which you park, and parkway on which we drive. Maybe the best inaptronym is a type of ammo named the Glazer Safety Slug. It's birdshot, encased in a bullet, so when it hits, say, somebody in the shoulder, instead of lodging or passing through, creating a treatable wound, it basically vaporizes that shoulder. The safety angle is that, say, in home defense, if you miss the threat, the slug is unlikely to penetrate a wall and kill the guy next door. Safety bullets. What a concept. The highest quality time with my kids has always been when we learn or build or create something together, like that Halloween monster. We could have just bought the inflatables like everyone else, but are those interactive or experiential? You buy it, take it home, blow it up, and hope the guy across the street doesn't have the same thing. I'm no carpenter. When we decided to build the monster, I had some wood scraps in the garage, some screws and nuts, and a vague idea. My daughter said she wanted to make a Frankenstein. Well, good. That would be a lot easier than Godzilla or Alien. We never made a sketch. We just laid the lengths of wood down on the ground and figured out how to put them together. Pretty soon, we had a crude Burning Man-style frame with two legs, a torso, and one arm stretched straight out from the shoulder. The other arm hung at the side. I had an old sport coat, black jeans, socks, construction boots, and a black t-shirt. But we couldn't just hang the clothes on the frame. It would have looked like a stick figure. Answer? A box of hefty lawn bags and fishing line. Winding dozens of those around his thin wooden arms and legs gave him muscle and girth, and also wouldn't get soggy in the rain. But I was having trouble giving him the barrel chest. The Halloween store had a great over-the-head rubber Frankenstein mask, and then my daughter spotted plastic armor built for a Roman centurion. Instant barrel chest. Lastly, what to put in the hand of that extended arm? Well, a big gleaming butcher knife, of course. Frankenstein really didn't need a knife, but why couldn't ours be a slasher, too? The only missing piece was a head to fit the mask over. So for the hell of it, we stopped in a hair salon where they had a bunch of wigs on white styrofoam heads. I asked the owner if she'd sell me one for the Halloween monster we were making, and she took one look at my little girl. Her face broke into a wide smile, and she gave one to her, telling her to be sure and make it a scary monster. Frank was nearly ready for display. He was enormous, 6'7", and brawny as hell. To make it even more insane, I put blinking red LED lights into his eye sockets. So now, he straddled 19th century European horror, urban psycho slasher, and the sci-fi aesthetic of the Terminator. I lugged him up to the roof and lashed him to the chimney with 10-gauge wire hidden in his back. He threatened the neighborhood with a big knife as his robotic eyes relentlessly flashed cyborg menace. Then we lit him from below, so at dark, he looked intimidating. This was no cartoony, benign, inflatable. This was a homicidal maniac ready to leap from the roof, hack off your head, and fling it into the foggy night. My daughter was thrilled. After dinner, she kept darting outside to marvel at our creation. It wasn't only that it looked fantastic. She was reveling in multiple delights. The rush of creation, of taking the abstract of an idea to the finished product of a fearsome monster. The payoff of effort, of winding that monofilament around those hefty bag limbs, drilling the bolt holes at his joints, of crazy gluing the butcher knife to his gloved hand, lacing up his boots, adjusting the mask just right on the styrofoam head, leaving the right amount of slack in his harness, so he loomed over the street like he was going to pounce and kill. It all came together for her in the biggest bang of all, achievement. At 3 years of age, she could not have articulated those feelings, but it was clear she felt them. She had built something herself, and it was utterly original, not another like it in the universe. Had we bought an inflatable, or even some Hollywood-caliber prefab Frankenstein, the satisfaction would have been fleeting. which generally holds true for acquisitions versus creations, doesn't it? Finally, she tired of staring at Uncle Frank, as she called him, and conked out, and my wife and I soon followed. The next morning, she shook me awake. "Daddy, Uncle Frank is sick!" She dragged me outside, and there was Frank, jackknifed at the waist, his face resting on his boots. After breakfast and coffee, we lowered him from the roof and stripped him. I'd done a substandard job with his framing. It got windy overnight and he simply broke in two. So, with more wood and some corner braces and bolts, we rebuilt Uncle Frank and put him back in his perch. My kid was even more jazzed this time because she knew that now he was made to last. And last he has. Over the years, we've reconfigured Frank as many characters. A psycho clown swinging from a bloody noose. A pirate holding the head of a female ghoul that he just hacked from her body with Frank's old butcher knife. Genghis Khan with a screaming banshee clinging to his shoulder. A Martian, a bloody-faced punk rocker, witches. One year he was Tors Johnson from Plan 9 from Outer Space Complete with a bloody crack in his bald skull. It's the self-made gift that's kept on giving year after year. Every Halloween it gets a fresh makeover, a new mask, an outfit, and a theme. Every year we get the kick of redesigning him, but the heavy lifting, the frame, only needed to be done once, well, twice. This year it's a werewolf, standing guard outside the house, daring anyone or anything to trespass the perimeter. My little girl is now a high schooler. Her older sister's in college. They haven't trick-or-treated in quite some time. But thanks to an idea and some exertion long ago, I get a yearly guarantee of superb quality time. We ponder the monster's new persona. We forage for the outfits and accessories. We lash him to a stake like Joan of Arc. We make sure he has the right tilt. Autumn leaves crunch beneath our shoes. Creamsicle-colored skies backlight the werewolf as cool October breezes make his clothing ripple in the eerie twilight. It's a symphony of authenticity. And the term quality time is far too weak a descriptor for the experience. Magnificent time might be more apt. Passively viewing something on a screen would not ever come close. It's hard to fathom how our world has been split into the authentic and the virtual. And how many people choose the virtual. That's where the real monsters are. Depraved, untouchable oligarchs of online empires that manipulate people far more easily and fully than my kids and I manipulate a wood-framed dummy. And we only work the dummy once a year. Those living in the virtual world have their strings pulled every waking moment. Is a cell phone grafted to a hand any different than a coax cable jack at the base of the skull? So yeah, the Matrix is a reality for some. I better bounce now. Both my girls will be home soon, and we've got pumpkins to carve. More Halloween authenticity. One year we got the templates, but never again. We just didn't like the jack-o'-lanterns that looked like someone else's. So we doodle and experiment until we come up with designs we dig. The only scent that beats the one you get when you first open that big gourd is the one when it's finished and a lit candle singes the inside. You dim the lights and see what kind of shadows it throws. There's no app for that. Thanks for hanging with me once again. It's always great to be with you. You know, there's quite a catalog of Halloween episodes with this show. For thrills of a different kind, check out episode 49, Halloween with a Mob. It's a true story of a near homicide I was almost a part of, located at Houdini's grave. If you'd prefer to have the shit scared out of you, check out episode 137, Halloween with the Toolbox Killers, or episode 222, Halloween with the Sunset Slayers. For a more sensual Halloween experience, try Larry's Dream Halloween, episode 279. The uber pointy chick thumbnail will give you a hint. They're all in the October tabs from 2017 to 2020 at thatlarryshow.com. And while you're there, hit the subscribe button so you never miss an episode. If you want to help me keep the lights on, you can do that by clicking the Patreon or PayPal buttons. There's also a P.O. Box address if U.S. mail is your preference. I checked the lazarette, and there are still a few unclaimed classic retro motel key fobs. If you want one, they're only 10 bucks. They look right, they feel right in your hand, and won't get lost in your bag. And best of all, they signal the world that you're a member of the Take No Shit Dojo and the greatest audience in all of podcasting land. You can get them at thatlarryshow.com. My friends, last Halloween was pretty much stolen from us, if you recall. Don't let them do it again. Trick or treat. Go to parties. Put on that costume, carve that pumpkin, build that monster. If the digital dwellers want to crawl into their creepy virtual world of fear, let them. You've got better things to do. Choose the authentic. I'll see you next Wednesday or thereabouts, and until that time, take no shit.